Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Hello, Elizabeth. You look like you're far, far away.
I feel far away from you today.
We've transformed our Pledge Central into the reluctant therapist's therapy room.
It is. It has all the accoutrements of a modern-day technological wonder, and my brand new chair, and my tea, and I couldn't be more excited to be here today. I love being a part of Pledge Drive. I think I've said that before, that I love the energy around the station during Pledge Drive and all the enthusiasm. And I love looking at the premium board of all the great things that people can get for pledging their support to KCBX. And I love listening to everyone, Marisa and you and Greg and Frank, get up and tell, you know, talk about the station. It's really fun to feel a part of something big and dynamic and exciting.
But does it make you want to make a pledge?
Absolutely. And okay. I hope it makes my listeners excited to make a pledge. And our topic today is spring fever, which I thought was appropriate to go along with spring pledge drive. And this whole idea of kind of shaking off, you know, the blues of the winter and diving into this new, exciting, blossoming time of life. And it's a great time to pledge your support to something that you care deeply about, like public radio.
Well, I hope that we hear from the people that find themselves tuning in every Tuesday at 2 o'clock, and I hope we hear from the people that call in on a regular basis, because if you call in and get information and support from Elizabeth, then we need to know that there is financial support for that as well. And you can do that, and this is going to be a little confusing because there's two phone numbers today.
That's right.
There's the pledge number that you know well at this point, 549-8855. That's if you want to make a pledge in support of the Reluctant Therapist, and we highly recommend that you do. But then if you want to be a part of today's show, it's the same call-in number, the 781-3875. So you might...
And I'll be giving that one so that people can get in touch with us. But if you do want to take a moment or two to make that call and make your pledge, I know I'd appreciate it. I mean, 10 years ago, I think I walked into this station with an idea of, hey, this might be something of interest to listeners. And here we are 10 years later doing this show every week. And I know that when I go places, people talk about listening. I know we have a lot of listeners online and people are podcasting it. And so to show your support of the show so that the station knows it's something that you value, to take the time and call in, or you can also do it online at kcbx.org. You can also make your pledges there. And if you make a pledge, there are the special premiums that are available. You just have to ask and see what's there.
And new for this pledge drive, we have most of our special premiums available to peruse online. If you just go to the website, kcbx.org/premiums, and you can see we try to keep it up to date as best as possible. And so check out the special premiums, check out the new KCBX t-shirts, which we have mounted on the wall over there.
Those are nice.
Yeah, we have a male one and a female version, so check it out.
And hopefully, as the hour progresses and we talk about the spring fever, symptoms of restlessness, giddiness, this desire to partner up and to take on new projects, that somehow you'll feel inspired to pick up the phone or go online and make your pledge, or run out and find someone to ask out on a date. Or maybe both. Maybe you'll run down here to the station to make your pledge in person, and you'll run into the love of your life, who's also running down to the station to make their pledge. I mean, that's how we do things. We are modern day yentas, matchmakers. And so if you are listening to the show right now and you're feeling that love in your heart, come on down, make your donation, your pledge in person, and you may just run into the love of your life. Because how else are we going to find each other these days if it's not for, you know, getting out of our cars or out of our house or from behind our screen and actually going out into the world and looking around and seeing what's out there or who's out there? We have to kind of make an effort to make it happen. And this extra energy and excitement and anxiety and anticipation that we feel as the days start getting longer is a good indication that we're primed for making those connections. That if you're feeling that extra intensity, that desire for love and attachment, you're not the only one. Everyone around you is feeling the same things, the birds and the bees and the guy driving in the car next to you. And so it's a good time to smile and stare a little extra longingly at the person behind you in line, because they're probably having those same feelings. Do you think you get spring fever, Hank?
I'm a little warm, yeah. I don't know. I get urges to get out and do things, and yeah, I guess I do. Especially when we have a true rainy winter like we did this time.
Yes.
A sunny weekend is very appealing to get out and do something fun.
Well, and it's interesting because spring fever isn't a medical diagnosis or even a DSM diagnosis, but there are studies being done and research being done into the symptoms that people experience when they come out of the winter blues and into spring, and seeing a correlation between brain activity or hormones that are released at this time of year that correlate to these actual seasonal changes. And there is this doctor, Norman Rosenthal, who works in a seasonal studies clinic, has found that 50% of the people that they interviewed or researched who live in North America, as kind of a phenomenon of the North American countries, North America and Canada, that there were 50% of the people could identify distinct hormonal and brain changes in their bodies as the spring equinox appeared. And these people tended to feel more energy, kind of come out of this melancholy or this bluesy state and move into a more energized, less depressed state. But the other thing that was interesting about the research is that there are also a certain amount of people that come into springtime, and instead of feeling energized or excited or more desired, they actually had increases in depression, increases in feelings of melancholia. And that was related to this sense of kind of seeing everything around you erupting in blooms and new life and feeling even more isolated or further away from these opportunities to partner up. So that's what we're going to talk about today. The phenomenon of spring fever and how it individually or communally or culturally hits us all. And this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're always welcome to be part of the conversation. Our number is 805-781-3875. That's the number to be on the air, different than our Pledge Central number. And you can also be a part of the conversation through our Facebook page. If you go to The Reluctant Therapist and like our page, you can get updates on shows and leave a comment. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. After you go there and make your pledge, you can check out all of our previous shows from the last few years and listen to the shows that way. Or you can also subscribe to KCBX, go to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist through iTunes, and you can subscribe to our podcast. And that way, our shows will be downloaded into your devices, and you can listen anytime you'd like. So what is this thing about spring fever? You know, you hear it in many different forms. Some people call it senioritis. There's the spring fever that comes along with the new blooms and new life and the wildflowers and people kind of feeling this craziness of new energy. There's that sense of restlessness, waiting for the summer and the longer days. Spring fever has been the kind of focus of literature and poems forever and ever. Lord Tennyson wrote an ode to spring. So this phenomenon of what happens during the spring season has been a part of lore, but we've never really talked about or associated the symptoms of spring fever with any sort of medical, diagnostical, or mental health issue or concern. But there's more research being done in mood, in light therapy, in seasonal studies. And it started with the studying of seasonal affective disorder, SAD, and that kind of led itself into these studies of if SAD is what we experience in the winter months, what happens in the spring months? And as I said, there is this shift that they've been able to identify in 50% of the people in the Northern Hemisphere who report feeling more energized, more upbeat, more sexually active, also a little bit more distracted than usual. They can identify this sense of flux that they're going through, the sense of renewal and opportunity and hope. And it's thought that humans may be instinctively responding to the seasonal changes, somewhat like coming out of hibernation after a long winter sleep. We've seen that we sleep less when we move into springtime, and that's maybe associated with the changes in the melatonin in our bodies that help us to sleep longer hours during the winter months. But now with the longer days, there's more opportunities to be awake, and so our body adjusts by lowering the melatonin. We have increases in our serotonin, which gives us energy and enthusiasm and interest in others. And so we see changes in our hormones that might be instinctively connected to the change of seasons, or maybe our body hormones respond to our own inherent temperament and excitement about the change in seasons. Because I know at my house, I would be considered more of a fall person. I really like when the days get shorter because I enjoy nothing more than going home at 4:30 when it gets dark and putting my pajamas on and just being in them from 4:30 on. I kind of like that hibernating, hunkering down part of the year. But my husband goes into definitely the blues of the winter. He doesn't like leaving for work in the dark and coming home from work in the dark. And it's just, I think it drags him down. And I have noticed a marked change in his demeanor and personality in the last couple of weeks that coincided with the change in the daylight savings time change and the longer hours. And all of a sudden he's out there pulling weeds in the yard and whistling as he works. And like I saw his mood change. And I've always known that, but I never really connected it so fully to this idea of this hormonal changes that we would go through with the change of the seasons. So maybe, you know, each of us have our own season where we thrive. And for those of you who are connected to this sense of renewed energy and vitality in the spring, then remember in the old days when they used to chart your colors you should wear by the seasons? And I'm sure for many of you, you remember. And for those of you who are much younger, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But there was this period of time where we were supposed to wear the colors that were connected to the season that most fit our personality and our coloring. And so maybe it's the same way with our moods and our temperament, that there is a season that we all do best in, that we respond to psychologically more powerfully. So I'm speaking to those who get distracted and energized and filled with desire during the springtime and are experiencing that sense of spring fever. And so what do we do with this energy? You know, what do we do if we've come out of kind of the darker doldrums of winter and we're coming into this longer days, period of time of bloom and blossom? How do we access that love that we might be interested in acquiring? How do we find our mates? And that might seem like a whole nother topic, but I'm going to tie them together because one of my friends was talking about the dating scene and how much it's changed over the last 15, 20 years and how much has changed in the last 5 years with dating apps, things that you have on your smartphone or online to access and meet others. Everything from Match.com to Many Fish in the Sea to Tinder. And there's a new dating app called Hater. And I just found it fascinating because the whole idea behind the Hater dating site was that instead of trying to find people who match up in all of the things that you have in common, you're looking for people who hate the same things, which makes so much sense. I think about, you know, again, back to my husband and I, a lot of what we enjoy the most is the fact that we'd only have to look at each other to realize and recognize when something annoys us both at the same time, or that we find someone or something that we both hate markedly the same. And it's kind of a bonding thing. And I don't know if you're familiar with the comedian Jay Mohr, M-O-H-R. He has a stand-up act. He's a pretty funny guy. And I remember seeing about a year ago, he added in part of his stand-up act that if you saw his wife and his DVR selections, it would look like they were not in a relationship together because they record completely different things. And so you'd wonder, why were they ever a couple? But what bonds he and his wife as a couple is that they absolutely hate all of the same things. And that is a much stronger force of commitment than it is all the things they have or don't have in common. And it's true because it's really easy to love people when you have the same things in common. It's really easy to love people on those things that you find common ground. What's challenging is how do you find people that love you, you know, when you're showing your ugliest side of yourself, right? How do you find those people that can stand being with you when you're not showing your best attributes? And so maybe there's something to that hater app. So I guess my questions today are twofold. One, are you feeling spring fever? And what does that feel like for you? How do you experience spring fever? Do you have this sudden urge to go jogging? Do you all of a sudden crave lighter foods like fresh salads? Do you all of a sudden want to plant foliage around your yard or dig up and put colored plants in your pots by your front door? How do you experience the spring fever? Do you have the restlessness? And what do you do with that energy? And then my other question is, if you're in the dating world, have you tried any of these apps? Have you been on Match.com or Hater or Bumble or Tinder? And have you had any luck with them? Are we going to go the way of formal introductions and matchmakers and do all of our mating online? And I wonder if there's an increase in this app usage during this time of year. So spring fever. By definition, as I said, it's not a medical term, and it's not an official DSM diagnosis, but it is applied to the various mood and physical and behavioral changes that we feel with the experience and the onset of spring. And I wanted to read to you Webster's definition of spring fever. It's the laziness or restlessness that many people feel during the first warm days of spring. And spring fever is also defined as the time when sap rises in maples and in young men. Let's think about that. How does spring fever affect you? 805-781-3875. As I said, spring fever has been around since the beginning of time. And in the 1960s, Elvis Presley had a movie called Girl Happy. And one of the theme songs from that movie, Girl Happy, was Spring Fever. So let's hear a little bit from Elvis and Spring Fever.
Spring fever, love is in the air. Spring is everywhere.
A little bird, he told me so. He said, come on, get on the go. Open your eyes, the sky is full of butterflies. The blossoms on the trees stirred up the honeybee. Spring makes my fever rise.
Spring fever.
Spring is here at last.
Spring fever.
My heart's beating fast.
There is no doubt now, love is in the air.
Get up, get up, spring is everywhere. Well, if you feel the wanderlust, just grab a car, a hop a bus, in every town, there's excitement.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Public Radio, KCBX, during our annual Spring Pledge Drive. And in honor of Spring Pledge Drive, we're talking about spring fever and how does it affect you and your life. Do you feel a change in your emotions or in your behaviors when the days grow longer and we have more sunshine? Do you feel that increase in serotonin and dopamine? Do you feel this desire to partner up? Do you look a little more longingly at people as they pass by? How does that spring fever impact you if it does? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. And because it is spring time, it's also spring break time. And so I'm fortunate enough to have my daughter Kelly home for spring break. And so I dragged her into the studio with me today because I wanted to talk a little bit about modern dating and how people access each other and how things change. And because Kelly goes to school in Chicago, I would imagine that there is a distinct change in mood on campus from the wintertime to spring. Do you notice that?
Oh, yeah. The whole social scene shifts. In the winter, it's trying to wear the least amount without freezing and walking out to gross parties happening in sweaty houses. And then as soon as the spring happens, everyone's day drinking and having outdoors parties and riding their bikes again. And it seems like everyone's more active and everyone starts going to the lake to lay out. It's definitely a happier time at Northwestern.
And it must have been really different for you because being in California, where it's kind of feels like spring all year round, to go from that completely dark winter to the springtime and everyone's pulling out their spring dresses. And so is there an increase in dating? I mean, on your college campus, is there this more birds and the bees fluttering around? People tend to be holding hands and walking across campus, or do you not notice the change?
So something that's kind of funny, I was just telling you about this right before we came in here, is that there's it seems like there's almost the opposite shift, at least from what I've seen and what I've been reading about and what I hear, is that in the winter times, everyone likes to get kind of coupled and kind of romantic. And it's also been called the cuffing season, I've read, because everyone wants someone to hunker down with and watch movies with and have a serious relationship with and do the holiday season with. And then now that it's spring, summer break's about a month or two away, and then some people are going to go study abroad, and everyone's feeling hot and cute in their new outfits, and so people are kind of breaking up and uncuffing, and it's also, I guess it's called the uncuffing season. So I do notice that most relationships that I know are ending, or my friends who have been single for a while are excited to get back out there. It's kind of the time to go date a lot, not necessarily to get into serious relationships, but it seems like the fling period.
the
spring
fling. Exactly. So what are your thoughts on springtime or spring fever? 805-781-3875. Is it Raj?
Yes.
How are you? What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm actually sitting outside the studio coming in to make a pledge. And I thought, well, I'll call Elizabeth first and talk about spring fever.
Yes.
I am somebody who is such a brown thumb gardener that even my silk flowers die. But I do find myself at this time of the year going out and planting things, even though I know I'm sending them to a death sentence. I have that desire to go out and plant things.
So it lives in there some way, right? It's like your insides are blooming and forcing you into the garden.
Right. Yeah. Even though I know the likelihood of them lasting very long is not very high. And I also wanted to talk about the dating scene because I'm, of course, at the other end of the spectrum from your daughter. And I have met somebody online, and I met them in November. So I met them going into the dark time. and now I'm wondering how it's going to be in spring.
Well, and did you use one of the dating websites?
I did, yes. And, you know, people ask me which one, and I can't remember because I'm on a couple. And to be honest, we both stopped. The minute we found each other, we stopped. And so I'm not sure which one it was. But we did. I like to tell people that we met on Tinder because I think that's the one that the young people use. And my niece saw his photograph and said, yeah, he's definitely a swipe right. So...
Well, and it's interesting because Helen Fisher, who I was going to talk about, she works with Match.com. She actually is a big supporter or fan of Tinder because she says that in a lot of the dating sites, we spend way too long chatting with people before we actually meet them in person. And she says Tinder is great because it's, you know, no muss. You either swipe left or right and you kind of meet up and you know if you have a match or you move on. And
right.
So we're kind of getting down to business that way.
Yeah.
And how long did it take you to meet someone? How long were you on the sites?
You know, that's why I was on for a while. My profile was up, but I never really did anything with it because I had a couple of really crazy experiences with people pretending to be from Siberia and odd places. And anyway, it was not good. And so I really had not taken any notes. I'd pretty well forgotten that I was even on them. And then I got this email from this guy, and he'd only been on for like 48 hours, and so we immediately clicked, and that's it. So no more for me. But anyway, so it can work even when you're ancient like I am.
Well, and according to research, actually, it's the younger generation and the elders, 60 and up, who are having the most success on these dating sites. And I think it's just a modern take on being at the right place at the right time, right? I mean, your profile was there. It's almost as if you were leaning with your elbow on the bar and the right guy walked in the room. Otherwise, you just didn't have to leave your house to do it. But I think it is still that idea of you have to put yourself out there in enough ways that people can find you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. All right, well, Raj, congratulations.
Thank you.
and I hope this
so
spring...
I'm going to come in and make a pledge right now.
Well, I appreciate that, too. Thank you for supporting KCBX. And that's so fun to hear.
I love that.
Yes, that the dating apps can work at all ages. And it's funny because you have really mixed responses. You know, not many people will instantly say, I love it, I think it's great. But in the last 5 years, well, actually in just the last 4 years, the use of dating apps has grown from 9% of Americans to 12% in just 3 years. The highest level of those who use dating apps, of course, are those 18 to 24, and those in their late 50s to early 60s. Actually, the people in the midlife age group of mid-50s to 70s has doubled the amount of people who are online looking for love in that way. So although people have had mixed experiences with it, I don't think it's any different than the mixed experiences of putting yourself out there and going on blind dates. You know, it's kind of the idea of you have to kiss a lot of frogs, and maybe that's just a faster way of sorting through the frogs.
And I think one of the barriers to total success of these dating apps is that people are really unwilling to say that they use them or that they like them, because being someone who, yeah, has a couple dating apps downloaded on my phone, if we starts by not taking it too seriously, if we acknowledge that we're using them for fun and to meet people and whatever happens happens, and not it's not a very serious looking for a husband sort of thing, then from there, if you're open to it, then actual possibilities and actual meetups can happen. I've met some pretty fun people from them, and it's a little weird, and it takes some time to get used to it. But a lot of it is just my friends and I sitting around swiping through and laughing at what we find and then giggling when someone likes us back. And I think it's fun. It's great.
And I think, like everything, right, you use the caution. You don't just show up at some dark place.
Of course.
Right. There's all – I think that – as we're moving through this idea of dating online, some of the protocol is kind of finding its way, some of the ways that we're safe around it. But I do, again, keep thinking that it's not much different than you and your girlfriends hanging out at the soda shop in the 50s.
And pointing someone out and going over
and then sending a note over to them.
It almost is, I mean, as much as I hate to say this, because I love to go out and talk to people and I love the in-person connections. And I, of course, want that to be the ultimate way that I meet someone is in person. But it almost is freeing or easier for a lot of people who don't feel comfortable doing that to use these dating apps, because they might actually be able to reach out to someone who they otherwise wouldn't have.
And for people who feel socially anxious about having to meet someone in person, the research shows that it's been a great boon for people who really would have a difficult time accessing love because they're reticent to go up to a stranger or be approached by a stranger. And so it's given people with less social confidence more confidence in
because of the initial contact being bridged.
Yeah. So, but I think your point is well taken, that if more people would admit to using the apps and talk about their experiences, it probably would normalize it, right? Make people less hesitant to talk about it.
I get all the time, do you have any dating apps? Do you use Tinder? Oh, no, that's weird. That's creepy. That's not how I want to meet someone that I'm going to be in a relationship with. Think about telling my kids that we met on Tinder. But, I mean, what's wrong with that? It's another way that they meet. And that's just the way that you initiate contact. But what happens from there, the dates that you go on, the time that you spend in person, is actually what makes up the relationship, not just how you initially made contact.
Well, and it's interesting because when they research people, Helen Fisher's work with Match.com again, she found that the majority of men who go on, you know, you would think they'd be just swiping to find women to go out with, you know, for sex.
One-time things.
I'm trying to think of a subtle way of saying it. But she actually found that the majority of men that were using these apps actually were hoping for long-term relationships. And I think that surprised a lot of people, because we knew already that most of the women using the apps were hoping that these one-time things would turn into long-term relationships. But they're equally surprised to find that many and most of the men were also hoping that these one-time things would turn into long-term relationships.
I mean, maybe I live in a bubble. Or maybe I'm just cautious and more aware of myself and my surroundings than others, but I've never had a negative experience. I've met up with a couple people from a couple different apps, and it's never been anything sketchy or uncomfortable. It's been polite people having a nice drink somewhere, and it's been positive for me. But I also approach it, I think, from a pretty healthy standpoint, having you as my mom.
Well said, my daughter. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. I am joined in the studio today by my daughter, Kelly Barrett. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX, and we're talking about spring fever. And do you feel that change? Do you feel that psychological, biological, behavioral change that comes over many of us when spring arises? Do you feel the sudden urge to go jogging or to plant things or to eat lighter or to plan vacations or to wear less clothes? How do you experience spring fever? And do you experience spring fever in such a way that you are willing to make a spring pledge drive commitment to this show that you listen to every Tuesday at 2? And if you are, this is a great time to pick up the phone and make a call. You can also pledge online to kcbx.org. And if you do make a pledge, remember we have our special premiums that are available to you. And I do appreciate all of my listeners taking the time to call in and make a pledge. And Bree, the number for making a pledge.
Yes, that number is 805-549-8855. That's locally. And if you'd like to call toll-free, it's 800-549-8855. And you can always go to kcbx.org to make a pledge if you prefer to do so.
And all of the premiums are also online there, so it's great.
Yeah, it's kcbx.org, I believe, /premiums, but if you click around, it might, if that's not correct, you can
You'll find your way. We try to be user-friendly.
Our listeners are smart people.
which makes it fun to have these conversations. And I'm always curious to know how these conversations are resonating with you. Maybe no one else is experiencing that spring restlessness. And maybe no one's having that sense of maybe wanting to shake off that relationship they've been in for a while and look for something new out there. Or maybe it's that spring cleaning urge. Because I know I have that. And much to the annoyance of my family, every year for my birthday, what do I ask for?
This year you asked to strip the house clean, throw away everything you don't need anymore, paint the house, clean the house, and then put everything back in.
Yes. And I have that desire and urge every year around my birthday, which is in late March. And it overcomes me. I have to have my house cleansed. I want all the doors and windows open. So do you feel that as well? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation. You are listening to Public Radio KCBX. And I mentioned Helen Fisher before. She is the biological anthropologist. She's also a professor. She's the chief scientific officer for Match.com. And I've been following her for years and years. And she's talked about love and relationships and the chemical reactions we have when we meet someone and we're ignited with those passions and where they come from. And she's really been on the cutting edge of promoting the use of online dating as a way for people to meet each other, because our desire to be in relationship hasn't changed. No matter how the technology changes or no matter how quick and fast and noisy modern life becomes, ultimately our desire to couple hasn't changed at all. And let's take a moment and listen to Helen Fisher talk about the dating world.
Online dating is just the newest way to do the same old thing. As a matter of fact, I think it's actually a little bit more natural. First of all, people are doing it, and a lot more people are going to do it. And they're going to do it because we're no longer marrying the boy we met in high school. We're not marrying the girl we met in college. We're not even marrying in our early 20s. And by your late 20s, you sort of know everybody in the office. You've gone through all of those boys. You've met everybody in your social circle. Where are you going to meet people? And also, with a very high divorce rate, there's a lot of people who are back in the dating game in their mid-30s, mid-40s, mid-50s, and higher. And you can't stand in the middle of Park Avenue in New York City and flap your dress up and down. I mean, at some point, you've got to find a new way of social networking. And all of these dating services are doing that. And among the young people, it's Twitter and Facebook and other social networks. So I think that, the human animal loves.
And I think I say it almost every week that our prime motivation in life is to love and to be loved and to access that love in our life. And it's the thing that drives people into therapy most often is their challenges in relationships. How do we access and find and maintain relationships that are nurturing and make us feel whole and make us feel connected? And what do we do with these feelings of desire when we are looking for and wanting to be with someone, whether it's that spring fever, lusty time where you just want to hold hands and run through the park, or if it's that kind of coming out of a season of darkness, maybe post-divorced or post-bad breakup, or maybe you've lost a spouse or a partner. And as we come out of the grieving time, that dark time of winter of grief, and you start awakening to the possibilities of love in your life again, where do we go to find that? Where do we go to find those relationships? And so I thought today would be a fun time to kind of share our experiences. Where are you accessing, if you are accessing, love and relationships? I have my daughter Kelly here talking about what's happening.
I'm a dating expert.
from the college perspective, what's happening. You know, I ask my students all the time, does anyone ever get called up and asked on a date anymore? No. Or text and asked on a date? Yes. Bree says she's been called up and asked on a date. So
yeah, that one time.
That's sad that you can actually count on one finger.
Oh, no. Well, I guess the different circumstances. I did get called one time in, like, eighth grade, but I got asked out on Facebook recently by a person I knew. So, yeah.
Facebook Messenger is also, it's the best way to communicate, so I feel that.
Yeah. It was a person I knew before. It wasn't just, like, out of the blue Facebook. But, yeah.
And so when it comes to the dating apps, is there a sense that people feel less than if they have to rely on technology? Because, you, as I mentioned before, we've been using Yentas and matchmakers and dating. I remember, you know, I have a very close friend that he and his wife met on the classified ads in the newspaper back in the day. I mean, I don't think it's that strange that we would utilize other avenues for meeting people. So maybe this is just a reflection of where we are as a culture.
Maybe.
And I think there must be something kind of fun about creating these profiles and seeing who you bring into your life. And as I mentioned before, this new dating app, Hater, which brings us together based on the things that we hate more than the things we have in common. And it was interesting because they talked about the three top things that bonded people and their hate. And the first one was the presidential election, that people found that common ground. The other one was slow walkers, that tended to people who both hated people who moved too slowly combined. And then there was a third thing that was like the top hater part. Another dating site that I found interesting is Bumble. If you're familiar with that, that's woman generated, where the women make the first move.
And then if they don't, after 24 hours, the match goes away and the person just disappears.
So the person who's trying to meet you goes away, or if the person doesn't respond to you?
So when you swipe right on someone and you like them on Bumble and they swipe right and like you as well, then it's a match and it shows up in your little dashboard. There's a picture of their face and it's a match. And if you, as me, as the girl, doesn't really want to message him or gets too busy or for whatever reason doesn't reach out after 24 hours, then the match disappears.
It flies away. Mm-hmm. And so for those who haven't done the dating app thing, who've never tried it, where would you suggest they start?
Bumble.
Bumble?
I think that...
Now you're assuming it's for women and men? You think they both should start with Bumble?
Oh, I think that from all the guys that I know, the young, obviously, from a college student perspective, guys that I know who use Bumble are a little bit more, take it a little bit more seriously, not so serious, but seem to respect the process a little bit more and not be as uncomfortable because Tinder just has such a sort of a stigma with the name. So it seems to be respected a little bit more by both parties. And if the woman reaches out, then I feel like it's more likely that the guy's going to want to respond because they're signing up for it, knowing that it's up to the woman to reach out.
It's like the Sadie Hawkins of dating.
Basically.
Apps.
It's also fun. It's fun for us girls. It's a little stressful. I know that within my friend group, we all have a hard time coming up with what our initial line is going to be. Because all of a sudden the pressure's on us to have either a good pickup line, or do you just say hey, or do you say something cute? It's always kind of fun for the girl too. I think it's almost empowering. And then when they reply, you're like, yeah, I did a good job.
Well, because there is that part. I mean, it causes a lot of social anxiety to anyone who has to make that first move and reach out. And again, I don't want to assume that everyone knows what we're talking about when we say Tinder or dating apps, but we're talking about assisted dating, but you go online and you type in Bumble, and then you go to the website and download the app onto your phone, to the app store, and then you download it onto your phone, and then you just kind of follow the steps. They're also mm-hmm. user friendly to make a profile,
mm-hmm. and it's free. There's premiums you can pay for, but I've never done that.
And then once you kind of have your profile up, then people start finding your profile and will access you, or kind of try to make a contact. So if you haven't tried the dating apps, or you have, I'd love to know what your experiences are. 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. You're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi.
Hi there.
I am calling. I'm a married person, and at various times in my life have experienced spring fever type emotions. It could be described as crushes for other people that I'm not married to, and it does seem to coincide with springtime. And so I was curious if you had some advice on kind of managing those emotions. For a person who is in a monogamous relationship and would like to maintain that.
Well, so it sounds like you're a little concerned that you have this spring fever sense of desire. Oh, I think I lost
yep.
you. Oh, okay. So you're concerned about those feelings and you wish that the spring would come and you would just kind of stay focused on the one relationship. So I'm wondering, though, if there is a big biological piece to this. I mean, Helen Fisher in her research talks about we have this surge of dopamine as the days get longer and the serotonin, you know, all those kind of love chemicals. So it is kind of a normal reaction to our bodies change. And so one of the things I would suggest, of course, even though it's just because we get married, and I'm sure we've heard the story over and over again, just because we get married, it doesn't mean that we stop having any attraction or noticing that there's any other people on the planet. We do have those feelings. They're still there. The idea, as you're saying, is you're making this choice that I want to commit all the feelings to this one person. And so one of the things you can do is try to plan some sort of spring fling activity with your spouse that kind of creates a novelty in the relationship. Because one of the things that Helen Fisher talks about is why spring is so enticing to us is because we've kind of come out of this the mundane colors of winter, and all of a sudden there's a lot of spring flowers and wildflowers and new birds and new smells, and it smells fresh. And that novelty ignites the dopamine and serotonin, those love chemicals. And so in our relationship, sometimes we get so comfortable, we kind of get rutted into our marriage and our day-to-day. And so we lose that novelty of that relationship. It doesn't feel as fresh. And so it's a really good time to do something really unexpected with your partner, to take all that energy you have and maybe plan a date where you drop a note in his pocket and, with a hotel key and say, meet me at room 306, and then show up and wear something risque and fun and kind of create that fantasy with your partner. Or take cut school or cut work, take the day off and go out into the wildflowers and have a picnic and roll around literally in the hay. Do something that's novel and really kind of creates a different sense of energy within your marriage. And I think that will help fulfill what you're feeling inside, which is this sense of wanting new. Does that help?
Thank you. That's really wonderful advice, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. And also, you know, I'm always curious to know if other people have ideas of how they can create that novelty and newness in their relationships. Because that's why dating is fun, is because there's that excitement, that pitter-patter of your heart. Will this person like me back? Or, you know, will they notice me? And there's that's what's enticing. It gets, you know, our fight or flight system going, the adrenaline. And we love that feeling, especially at springtime, you know, where when we start to feel like we want to be refreshed and renewed. And it can be challenging in relationships to kind of keep that going. But I'm telling you, if one person in the relationship takes a step forward, does something completely unexpected or changes things up, you know, pull your mattress out into the backyard. My husband and I, every year, we have kind of a platform set up in the backyard and we drag our mattress out and sleep in the backyard. And it feels like we're a million miles from home, but it kind of gives you this renewed sense, you know, watching the stars and being together. And it feels like an emotional vacation, and it kind of gives us this sense of doing something magic together that no one else, you know, knows about. I'm sounding so cryptic, but I'm just wanting to say that that's the work of marriage, is to do things that make it feel fresh and new and spring-like. So now you've got homework. Are you? I hope you're up
Thank
to the
you.
Task. Good luck with that. Call me back. Let me know what you decide to do, because I'm sure other people will love to hear your ideas of how you channeled all of your springtime energy. And I always appreciate...
That was a good call.
I know. I appreciate that. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. I'm joined in the studio today by my daughter, Kelly Barrett. We're talking about spring fever and springtime and what is going on with this change of seasons. Although it's not considered a medical condition or in the DSM as being something that is treatable or a disorder we should be concerned about, there is enough evidence showing that we do go through biological and social and psychological adjustments in our bodies when we start having longer days, when the sunlight triggers an increase in our hormones. And it also inspires us to seek out, as I said, novelty, to seek out more activity, to seek out a kind of a cleansing of the world around us. And it also has inspired a lot of really interesting music. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with the song Fever that I think Peggy Lee originally did. But I was listening to different versions of the song Fever, and I came upon a version by La Lupe that I just loved so much that I thought today's show would not be complete without a little bit of Fever for your listening pleasure. This is Public Radio KCBX.
Come on, baby, now you got it, eh? Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. I love to have you around, surround me. I get the fever, that's so hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever all through the night. Everybody got the fever. That is something you all know. Tener fiebre no es de ahora, hace mucho tiempo que empezó. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever all through the night.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. We're listening to Fever by La Lupe, and we're talking about spring fever and where it takes us at this time of year. You know, different directions. Some people feel this heightened sense of desire. As I mentioned earlier, one of the definitions of spring fever is the time when the sap rises in maples and in young men. That's a very old, yes, an old... definition of spring fever. And so some people feel this increased sense of desire, this desire to date, to partner up, to connect with others. Some people feel this heightened sense of energy, wanting to go for a jog or exercise a little more, or get out into the sunshine, or to do their spring cleaning, clean their house, or maybe clean out, you know, unwanted clutter in their lives. Maybe you start to feel like you want to eat lighter. We eat more stews and heavier foods during the winter months. And so the springtime can ignite our desires for salads and fruits, which is helpful because of the way the foods change throughout the year. Some people feel a strong desire to just smile, to just spread that happiness and joy, that we tend to be a little more gracious in allowing people to cut us off or get in line in front of us or allowing them to go first. And so have you noticed a change in your mood or behaviors with the onset of spring? 805-781-3875 is the number to share your experience with spring fever and how you're feeling. And we also have been talking about dating apps and kind of the rise of this new way of accessing love in our lives. And there are a slew of dating apps from Match.com and Harmony and Plenty of Fish. And then the younger set tends to use things like Tinder and this new one we're going to talk about, Hater or Bumble. So have you tried any of these apps and how have they worked out for you? Is it something that you would admit to using, and or are you afraid to using Are you afraid to use these apps? Or a little concerned? We can talk you through that also. Because I think one of the things that makes people a little anxious about it is not being comfortable with the whole idea of going to the iTunes app store and downloading the app and making the profile and what to say. Like, wouldn't it be a great service if there was a profile builder that people could go to, or someone that could help them know what to put into their profile? Like, what are some key things that you would want to say about yourself? And part of it's you need to watch what you wish for, right? Because mm-hmm. if you put yourself out there in your profile, you need to be ready for who's going to be attracted to whatever you put into that profile. So you either want to undersell or oversell yourself, depending on who's going to be reading it and who's going to be attracted to your profile. So let's say, Kelly, someone creates the Tinder or the Bumble. And you know, for people who don't know, what does the swipe right or left thing mean?
You swipe left when you don't particularly care for whether it's the way they look in their pictures or what they've written in their bio, their little biography about themselves. You swipe left and they go away. Mm-hmm. And then it gives you another option. And then you swipe right when you like the way they look or you like something that they wrote. I always swipe right when it's someone who has a good university listed under their name and he doesn't have any gross shirtless mirror selfies, pictures they've taken of themselves. There's some things that people look for, but swipe right is yes, swipe left is no.
And so if you swipe right, then the other person swipes right, and does it automatically connect you with an email or a text?
You get a little notification that says, you've both swiped right. You both like each other, or you have a new match if it's Bumble. And then all that means is that if you go to your dashboard, you see your matches, little pictures of your matches, and then you can click on them and then send them a message, or they can send you a message.
Interesting. So what do you think about this new world of dating apps? 805-781-3875. Hi, Sebastian. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. How's it going? I was just wondering what would be a good suggestion. I've tried Tinder, and I never really had a decent conversation or had a date on there, so I don't know. I just kind of run out of ideas for dating in the modern world.
That's so hard because
I was going to say I don't have any selfless or shirtless selfies. So.
Well, that's already a bonus then, Sebastian.
I might swipe right. that's hard because it's easier to have the conversations, but then when it comes to actually meeting up, someone feels uncomfortable about it or thinks that's too creepy or too far. But it's all about kind of how you approach it and who you meet. I mean, you match with so many people and you'll meet up with one out of every 100 of them. So it's definitely not a common thing. But if Tinder's not working, I am a big fan of Bumble. I know it's kind of probably different for the men because they don't get as much of the control of the initial conversation.
Yeah, okay, so starting the conversation.
Good. So it gives, they like it better because they don't have the pressure of reaching out first. But I love Bumble because the matches are temporary, it almost puts the pressure on to make sure that you're actually reaching out and communicating if you're interested.
Have you done Bumble before, Sebastian? Have you tried that?
No, this is the first time I've heard about it.
It's fun. And the quality of, I mean, this is kind of a odd statement to make, but it seems like the quality of people, maybe just the quality of photos or the level of people that you meet on Bumble seems higher. It seems like a more select group of people as well. If you're actually interested in dating or relationship, I think that's probably a better place to look.
I've
noticed on Tinder, it feels like someone's been like hacking it or something, because there's like a lot of fake profiles.
Not with Bumble. You have to verify it three different ways: through your email, Facebook or social media presence, and then also your phone number. So Bumble prevents that pretty effectively.
Yeah, maybe Tinder got a little corrupted.
I'm not a fan of Tinder.
Well, and I don't know if you heard me talking about Hater, which is another new dating app.
I just downloaded it here in the studio.
And it looks apparently very user-friendly. And so, Sebastian, can we take a minute? Do you think your profile is preventing you from getting quality matches?
It could be. I mean, it's just super basic. I say I'm like 6 foot, classy gent looking for a classy lady, and then I got a small little Doors quote on there.
Okay, well, take the words classy out of your profile immediately.
But 6 foot's good. I'm glad you put
your
height.
The 6 foot's good. The Doors quote is good. It probably suits you. But you take the classy part out because that kind of smacks of a gold chain with a horn of plenty on it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just putting that as a way to quickly say I'm not interested in hooking up kind of thing. But
without saying I'm not interested in hooking up. I totally get that. Because if you say I'm not interested in just a one-time thing, then it probably freaks people out. And they're like, oh, no, this guy's going to propose to me on the first night. So I totally understand the conflict.
So what's another word or term that you can say if you're, you know, looking for – you don't want to, you know, start to go to pina coladas and walks on the beach sort of thing.
I think less is more because you can say that when you have the conversations with them. You can
so
make
what
it pretty clear
that people
it's
are looking
gonna...
for. 6 foot. Like, what are your hobbies?
You know, I see a lot of, like, people, like, put outdoors and hiking and that stuff. And, I just try not to be too...
cliche.
I think of the word. Yeah, cliche about that. So, yeah, I don't really put my hobbies or anything. You know, and also I think my problem is I can be really charming in real life, but when it comes to messaging,
it's
I'm
hard.
Not very charming.
So I like the Doors quote is a good idea, but I think you need to throw a couple things in there that kind of set you. No, my daughter's shaking her head.
I mean,
want to say something about, you know, I'm more fun in person than online.
That's pretty good, Mom.
Thank you.
See, I really like to keep it very elusive and less is more. And if you want to talk to me and get to know me, you can. But that's just my game, my dating app strategy.
Yeah.
Currently, my profile says I'm home in California for a couple of weeks. I'm super fun and I like to take baths.
That's
all
it
says.
A lot of information.
But it doesn't say anything about my hobbies or where I go to school because all of that more substantial stuff, I feel like. If you like the way I look on my dating app, because let's be honest, what we're going to look at is the picture or how old they are and their height. If you like that, then you should be interested enough to ask more about what I like to do as a person as well. But the initial contact, I think, is a lot more influenced by the pictures that you have.
Yeah.
Does that help, Sebastian?
We're silly.
A little bit, yeah. I'll think about that and adding something. I might just try out Bumble and just give up on Tinder.
Good idea. I support that. But, I do both.
But trust me, Sebastian. Trust me. Drop the classy. Never use the word again. And never wear flip-flops on a date.
Sounds good.
Or in public, for that matter.
My mom is very strongly opposed
to those things
to
will help you. And I do kind of like the line that I'm a lot more fun in person than in my messaging. And I think people will be curious about that. And I think a lot of people will relate to that, too. Thanks for taking the time to call. Let me know how it goes on Bumble. I think we could do this, take this on the road, maybe.
I think we need to get our ideas a little bit more aligned. We've got pretty differing perspectives here.
That's true. But I think that goes with the generations also.
Sebastian, good luck. Maybe I'll swipe right.
But now, really? So today we've been talking about spring fever along with our spring pledge drive and hoping that you'll be inspired to make that phone call to pledge your support to the show, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, or you can come down to the station and check out our special premium board and make your pledge in person, or you can always go online to kcbx.org. As always, I appreciate the community support. I love having the opportunity to come in and talk to you every Tuesday at 2, and I appreciate your continued support of Public Radio KCBX. Kelly, thank you for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to miss you all when you go back to school, and I look forward to our conversation next week, next Tuesday at 2. Until then, I'm going to leave you with a little Dave Matthews, a song to get you in the spirit and the mood of desire and love in springtime.
Oh, again. I can't step past you. I won't wash my hands. Red is the color of the sun with my eyes closed. I can still taste you. Next to go, drop in a place, next to go.